continuing on the verses on Nityananda Pool. And Krishna willing, we shall finish those. And possibly some more. So the topic was inconceivable information. This was the topic about that we were discussing about the Vedic knowledge gives that. Did we read the paragraph on one may ask? No, we didn't. That was the one we were up to. So we were up to the point where describing the parampara system, a process of receiving knowledge in a descending fashion, not using one's intelligence to gather knowledge, because one can do that certainly, but since one's intelligence is material, there's a limitation at what one can achieve by one's intelligence. Basically, one can get the negation of matter, which was pushed to its furthest extreme, is the Brahman. So one can achieve that to some degree by virtue of his the potency of his own intelligence. Through discrimination, he could understand that he himself has nothing to do with the material world. That is the process of Jnana Yoga. Through meditation, one can perceive oneself as consciousness and know that one is completely separate from the body. This is quite possible. And compared to understanding Krishna and Goloka Vrindavan, it's quite easy to separate oneself from one's body, and then still more difficult is to discriminate between oneself and one's mind. Still more difficult is to discriminate between oneself and one's intelligence, because the intelligence is finer still than the mind. And still more difficult is to discriminate between one's actual self, the consciousness, the person, and the false ego, the subtlest of misidentifications and the subtlest of coverings over the soul. But it's possible. It's possible to do this. But one has to have a particular mentality, and one really has to be situated fully in the mode of goodness to be able to do that. And then, if one is practicing impersonal ascending yoga, or this Jnana Yoga, then one has to, because one can perceive oneself different from the false ego, but one still, according to them, has a sense of I am, or personal existence, and then one has to dissolve that so he can identify that I am, that sense of I am, which is consciousness or spiritual. He can identify that with the Supreme, the all-pervading consciousness, with Brahman. And actually to do that, so that's the process of Jnana Yoga, finer and finer and finer, more subtle forms of meditation. And then eventually to achieve a full identification with Brahman, one actually has to do some bhakti, and because it's not possible of fully dissolving the false ego by one's own power. So one needs some bhakti. So even to attain that jnana realization is dependent on some descending mercy. What to speak of? But one can do so much of that by making his consciousness more and more subtle. But the last point even is dependent on bhakti, that final identification. So ultimately, all processes are dependent on bhakti. So, and bhakti, what does bhakti mean? It means the devotional attempt to please Krishna, because the soul has turned away from Krishna. Now, the cure for that is turning back to Krishna. Instead of thinking of himself as independent and self-sufficient and that entity whom the universe either is or should be centered around. He's thinking of himself, conversely, as a servant of the Supreme Lord, whether regardless of what religious path one is following. This is the essence of it, that one has to consider oneself a servant. And inherent in that is surrender, which is really the beginning of bhakti. So this is the method of turning to Krishna again. And these truths and the descending process and the process of achieving understanding of that which is inconceivable, which is a definition of the Supreme Absolute Truth. He is inconceivable by anyone, actually, because he indeed is the source of everyone and everything in existence, and everything depends upon him. So how can the product understand its source fully? It's not actually possible unless the source reveals and explains himself. And there are so many hidden facts, and even then, the product cannot understand its source completely. And that's what Krishna explains this point in the Bhagavad Gita. So then, as the text said, that Prabhupada was explaining the disciplic succession, how this inconceivable knowledge is of the absolute supreme source, the absolute truth, is received. So he explains the concept of disciplic succession ending, that Ishwar Puri was the spiritual master of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So then we'll continue the reading here. One may ask that if Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, then why did he need a spiritual master? Legitimate question. Because if he's the source of knowledge, why does he, if he's Krishna, who is the origin of everything, he knows everything as it is. Vedaham samatityani. He knows everything as it is. Why is it that he would need a spiritual master to attain this knowledge? So Prabhupada continues, of course he did not need a spiritual master, but because he was playing the role of a charger, one who teaches by example, he accepted a spiritual master. Even Krishna himself accepted a spiritual master, for that is the system. In this way, the Lord sets the example for men. We should not think, however, that the Lord takes a spiritual master because he is in want of knowledge. He is simply stressing the importance of accepting the disciplic succession. The knowledge of that disciplic succession actually comes from the Lord himself, and if the knowledge descends unbroken, it is perfect. Although we may not be in touch with the original personality who first imparted the knowledge, we may receive the same knowledge through this process of transmission. And Prabhupada once explained that this is the inconceivable potency of disciplic succession, is that one simultaneously attains, one simultaneously associates directly with Krishna and simultaneously associates him through his spiritual master and through the chain, that unbroken link. This is the mystery of the disciplic succession, that the association with Krishna, the contact with Krishna, is simultaneously direct and indirect through the chain of disciplic succession. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated that Krishna, the Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, transmitted transcendental knowledge into the heart of Brahma. This, then, is one way knowledge is received, through the heart. Thus, there are two processes by which one may receive knowledge. One depends directly upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is situated as the Super Soul within the heart of all living entities, and the other depends upon the Guru, or Spiritual Master, who is an expansion of Krishna. Thus, Krishna transmits information both from within and from without. We simply have to receive it. If knowledge is received in this way, it doesn't matter whether it is inconceivable or not. One the implication is that one can understand something that is beyond his power to understand. Just like, where does the rice that we get come from?
Does it?
It's basmati rice from Pakistan? Okay. So we can understand something about the rice. But who grew the rice? Some Pakistani farmer, say. And what was his name? And what were his family members, and how did he get the land? From just examining the rice, at most we can understand it as basmati rice, if one knows the difference between basmati rice and Thai jasmine rice or whatever. But we can't. But by understanding the package the rice came from, we can understand it's basmati rice. But there's a limit to what we can understand in that way to find out about the farmer, the source, or the source and where he got his seeds, etc. We need a different kind of knowledge. But if that knowledge, if somehow or another they bring over that Pakistani farmer and they say, this is the person who grew it, you know, some type of a promotional thing, he's the person who grew the rice, and then we can say, well, tell us about your family, what's your wife's name, how many children do you have, how old are you, what year were you born, what were your parents like, what were your family like. He can tell us so many things directly that would be inconceivable to us to attain by our own power. So even though it is inconceivable, if knowledge is received in this way, it doesn't matter whether it is inconceivable or not. Inconceivable in the sense Prabhupada means beyond our conceptual ability to attain that knowledge through an ascending process of using our intelligence. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a great deal of information given about the Vaikuntha planetary systems. And why is it necessary that, in relationship to Chaitanya Charitamrita, why is it necessary that these points are thoroughly understood about the receiving of inconceivable knowledge? The whole thing? Which whole thing? The pastimes? Yeah, they're really, very good. They're actually inconceivable. Because Krishna, first of all, Krishna himself is inconceivable. Then he comes in the mood of Srimati Radharani, that's also inconceivable. And he's continuously involved in separation, and sometimes he's so absorbed he's involved in pastimes of the Leela of Radha and Krishna, and sometimes he's taking different moods, sometimes he's taking the mood of an assistant, sometimes he's taking the mood of Srimati Radharani, and this is Krishna. He's tasting all these things. It's impossible for us to understand this any other way than hearing it through the disciplic succession, the chain coming from Mahaprabhu Mahaprabhu, then Srup Damodar, Raghunath Das Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj, Narottama Das Thakur, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Baladev, Jagannath Das Babaji Maharaj, then Bhakti Vinod Thakur. We'll come out with so many peculiar understandings even when reading the book, unless we get it.
Is Krishna missing himself? That's really hard to imagine.
And especially when you read the intensity of the emotion that he's missing himself with. He's falling on the ground. His bodily limbs sometimes withdraw into his body like a turtle. Sometimes there's 6 inches between the joints of his body, Sometimes there's blood oozing from every pore of his body. Sometimes there's foam and saliva just frothing. Sometimes the tears from his eyes are squirting like a syringe would squirt. And the ocean of the Ganga would come from his eyes. It would pour and pour inconceivably. Sometimes he'd be running and running and then just suddenly collapse to the ground. So these dealings were, sometimes he would be locked inside his room and then suddenly, and he'd be making sounds, and then suddenly there would be no sound in there, and Subdhamana would become worried, and he'd open the doors, and then he'd see Mahaprabhu wasn't there, and then everyone would go searching for him. And sometimes he would stay, he'd jump into the ocean and stay underwater, and then a fisherman caught him and became infected with love of God, and he could not stop chanting Krishna's name. These things, how could anyone conceive? So to get this knowledge of what, this important knowledge of what love of God actually is, we have to understand the process of getting inconceivable knowledge. That there's no other way to understand these things other than hearing it in a proper way. So any attempt, something a great deal, in Srimad Bhagavatam, there's a great deal of information given about the Vaikuntha planetary system. What goes on in the spiritual world? How are we going to know what goes on in the spiritual world unless we hear it from authoritative sources? Similarly, a great deal of inconceivable information is given in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So this is Prabhupada has reached the point here. And any attempt to arrive at this information through experimental knowledge will fail. Just imagine through deductive logic or mathematics trying to find the equation to describe Mahaprabhu. And sometimes his body, it became just like a pumpkin, a big pumpkin. So you can imagine a scientist going over with some calipers and, you know, I wonder how Mahaprabhu retracted so many.
It come from his family upbringing.
Something. It's withdrawn, somewhat autistic, it seems. And certainly one will misunderstand everything or not understand anything. The knowledge simply has to be accepted. But it can be accepted, but it can be realized too. By accepting it, it doesn't mean that you can't realize it, but it's a different process of realizing it. According to the Vedic method, shabda or transcendental sound is regarded as evidence. Sound is very important in Vedic understanding, for if it is pure, it is accepted as authoritative. Even in the material world, we accept a great deal of information sent thousands of miles by telephone or radio. Nowadays, radio? The people? Yeah. Radio? Remember what that was? Bunky, you remember what radio was, yeah?
It was broadcast at a certain frequency, and the same frequency is on the radio set.
Yes. So it's broadcast from so far, even though it could be, even when the first telegraphic message, this was before the radio and the television, what to speak of the internet and everything. They worked out the codes, and I think it was Morse code, yeah. And the first message that came through was, "What hath God wrought? What has He made to allow us to be able to, over hundreds of miles away, to be able to get a message across?" But now, no one, I mean, that's pious at least. There's some piety in there that by the grace of God this is happening. Because no one knows how electricity can really works. You know, they can say so many things, but no one can just really say how it works. It's working by the potency of the Supreme Lord ultimately. So ultimately, so we can harness it and make it work, make the God's laws work according, manipulate them to some degree, but no one can duplicate it. No one can make it happen. No one can enforce the. Just imagine if the enforcement of the law of gravity was put in the hands of the Indian government or something like that. You know, sometimes why the Indian government? Any government?
Why it should always come to the ground?
Well, sometimes it
cannot go.
And you can imagine just today. There'll be somebody betting, and somebody say, "Today it can go up. You can give me something. You can make it go up." Yes.
Today there is
no gravity at all. And there's the rules, and no one would follow them anyway.
We cannot do anything.
Yeah, we cannot do anything.
The crowd gravity would be rather chaotic.
Yes.
They say nobody can produce a blade of grass. Nobody can. All humanity can do it.
Yes. So there's a systems. There are subtle systems by which man can harness and use as they like to some degree. But the same system is used in more, still more subtle ways, transference of sound vibration. So sound vibration then is very important in the transmission of Vedic knowledge. The Vedas inform us that beyond this cosmic manifestation, there are extensive planets in the spiritual sky. So here Prabhupada is informing them, yes, there is a spiritual sky. And he has in Chaitanya Charitamrita, an incredible detail will describe the activities of the spiritual sky. But here, just that this a spiritual realm exists that is eternal. Paramagatim, this is the supreme abode, the supreme goal, the supreme destination. This material manifestation is regarded as only a small portion of the total creation. So this is new information for the people of those days. And those days means in the 60s. But there's actual, it's very tangible. Spiritual doesn't mean ethereal like ghosts or something like that. Spiritual means eternal. So people generally have a very fuzzy conception, vague conception of what spiritual is, of what spiritual life is, and the difference between spiritual life and material life. Very vague conception. But we shouldn't have a vague conception. We should have a very clear conception, the difference. And as Prabhupada explained earlier, that one can actually be practicing fully, deeply spiritual life while in the material world and not be touched by material life because it's a matter of consciousness. So the material manifestation includes not only this universe but innumerable others as well. So the scientists accept that there are innumerable universes? No.
Yeah, they do.
They do? Innumerable universes?
Yeah.
Huh?
The galaxy is called Milky Way.
Oh yeah, but that's all within this universe. Because you can't see without a universe. They don't generally, they don't accept, because how could they say there is?
Well, it's expanding.
Yeah, they say it's expanding. And then they say it eventually will contract. We also say that. And actually there was a recent scientific, maybe last year I think, I became aware of it. They were saying there is a continuity of expansions and contractions, you know, going from a singularity, going out into expanding out, and then eventually it hits its final point, and then it comes back and retracts, contracts again, and then it comes out again. brilliant. This is what not everyone accepts that, but this was one new scientific theory got the attention of the world for 15 minutes, and this is what it was, and this is actually the Vedic system creation, destruction. Well, they cannot say that, so that's about this universe. But they cannot say that there are unlimited universes. But they cannot say that there aren't unlimited universes. Where does their information come from to say that there aren't unlimited universes? When they talk about the black holes, and all the matter goes rushing into this black hole, but they can't say what happens to it. Where does it go? Unlimited density. You know, they don't really know. So they cannot, as they cannot say there are unlimited universes, they also cannot say there aren't. So the process of gaining information is something different. So Prabhupada continues, the material manifestation includes not only this universe, but innumerable others as well. But all the material universes combined constitute only 1/4 of the total creation. So here we're into this is an estimate. It's called Eka Palabhuti, 1/4. But if you say that Krishna Loka is unlimited and all the Vaikuntha planets are unlimited, how can you have a quarter? And first of all, there's more than one unlimited, and a quarter of that is the material creation. So what's a quarter of something that's unlimited or infinite? It isn't, you know, it's incalculable. So in any case, this just to give us an idea that this material world isn't everything. It's just a portion of the totality of creation. It's finite, actually, while the spiritual world is infinite. The remaining 3/4 is situated in the spiritual sky. In that sky, innumerable planets float, and these are called Vaikuntha Lokas. In every Vaikuntha Loka, Narayan presides with his 4 expansions, Sankarshan, Pradyumna, Aniruddha, and Vasudev. This Sankarshan, states Krishnadas Kaviraj, is the 8th verse, in the 8th verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, is Lord Nityananda. So it's leading to the point of how the Nityananda is expanding in Sankarshan. As stated before, the material universes are manifested by the Lord in the form of Mahavishnu. Just as a husband and wife combine to beget offspring, Mahavishnu combines with his wife Maya, or material nature. This is confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita 14.4, where Krishna states, Savayunasya Kanteya Murtaya Samvatiya Tasam Brahma Mahadyuniya Aham Vijavada Pita. It should be understood that all species of life, O son of Kunti, are made possible, Krishna says, by birth in this material world, and that I am the seed-giving father. Vishnu impregnates Maya, the material nature, simply by glancing at her. This is the spiritual method. Materially, we are limited to impregnating by only one particular part of our body, but the Supreme Lord Krishna or Mahavishnu can impregnate by any part. Simply by glancing, the Lord can conceive countless living entities in the womb of material nature. This Brahma Samhita, the Brahma Samhita confirms that the spiritual body of the Supreme Lord is so powerful, it's unlimitedly powerful, and again, that's inconceivable. We can only conceive of limited things. But we cannot conceive of something unlimited. We can't even conceive of vast limited things, like the ocean. We can conceive of how big the ocean is, how many cups of water,
milligrams,
kilos,
liters.
I was trying to think of a lake in Perth, but I couldn't think of one. Are there any lakes in Perth?
Mm-hmm.
Huh? How many Bibra lakes fit in the ocean? That's not a lake. You can't even call it a lake. So unlimited. So Krishna is unlimited. We can touch. Brahma Samhita confirms that the spiritual body of the Supreme Lord is so powerful that any part of his body can perform the function of any other part. We can touch only with our hands or skin, but Krishna can touch just by glancing. We can see only with our eyes. We cannot touch or smell with them. We can almost smell with our eyes.
Smoke coming out or something.
No. Yes, maybe like that, but I was thinking sometimes when you see something, you can taste it. You see something, it looks so good, you can almost taste it, right? Yes? You can almost taste it. It looks so good. Or you can, when you're smelling something, you can almost taste it. And if you, yeah. So our senses are not quite interchangeable, but they have the tendencies. But Krishna's are actually fully interchangeable. We cannot imagine how things work in the spiritual world. It is not that Krishna does not eat or that we imagine that he eats. He actually eats, but his eating is different from ours. Our eating process will be similar to his when we are completely on the spiritual platform. On that platform, every part of the body can act on behalf of any other part. Vishnu does not require anything in order to create. He does not require the goddess Lakshmi in order to give birth to Brahma, for Brahma is born from a lotus flower that grows from the navel of Vishnu. The goddess Lakshmi sits at the feet of Vishnu and serves him. In this material world, sex is required to produce children, but in the spiritual world, a man can produce as many children as he likes without having to take help from his wife. So there is no sex there. Because we have no experience with spiritual energy, we think that Brahma's birth from the navel of Vishnu is simply a fictional story. We are not aware that spiritual energy is so powerful that it can do anything and everything. Material energy is dependent on certain laws, but spiritual energy is fully independent. The spiritual energy is meant for pleasing Krishna. It is unlimited. So is it possible for us to understand this, factually speaking? Sometimes we get little glimpses, perhaps, but we can't actually understand it. We can understand that we have no ability to penetrate into the spiritual world, to understand deeply about it, but especially by our own powers, we cannot understand what the spiritual world is like. One has to be spiritual to understand that. We can use Chandra Shaka Naya. You know what that is? Yes, so we can say it's like this. We say that Krishna's skin color is like that of a monsoon cloud. Has anyone ever seen a beautiful monsoon cloud just in the rainy season? It's actually quite wonderful. And not this year, but last year, it was the only time I actually really saw it. But early in the one morning in Vrindavan, during the monsoon season, there was a fresh, blackish cloud. And just as the sun was just coming up, and the cloud was effulgent. There's a certain time sometimes during the rainy season, especially in the early morning and at dusk, the atmosphere becomes very effulgent and quite incredible. The colors are like iridescent. So on that particular morning, I saw the cloud. It was giving off effulgent rays, this blackish cloud. It was so otherworldly and so wonderful and beautiful. And I realized I want to take a picture of this, you know, but there's no use. I might as well just stare at it and just so incredible. So that's like Chandra Shakanayas. So if a cloud, which is composed of material energy, with the sun shining through it, which is material, if this is so wonderful, just imagine what Krishna's blackish complexion with its incredible effulgence is like. It's just like an effulgent fresh monsoon cloud. But actually it isn't. But it's just the way that our mind can penetrate a little bit. It's like taking that times 1,000 or 1,000,000. Or 1,000,000,000, but it's still not that, because that's taking something material and timesing it by 1,000,000,000. Krishna's is spiritual, but we want to conceive something. So this gives us, it's like saying, oh, the moon is just above the branches of that tree over there. So we have a way of taking, finding out where the moon is, getting a glimpse. But of course, the moon isn't above the branches. It's hundreds and thousands of miles away. So, the spiritual energy is fully independent. It's so powerful that it can do anything and everything. Material energy is dependent on certain laws, but spiritual energy is fully independent. Countless universes reside like seeds within the skin pores of Mahavishnu, and when he exhales, they are all manifest. In the material world, we have no experience of such a thing, but we do experience a perverted reflection in the phenomena of perspiration. We cannot imagine, however, the duration of one breath of Mahavishnu, for within one breath all the universes are created and annihilated. So who can say, how can this be true? Who can say it? By our own power. Who can say, on the other hand, how could it not be true? There's a different methodology of learning it, and it takes the transcendental shabda or sound vibration, which just by hearing it purifies the heart. It is so fantastic, actually. It is inconceivable for us. A huge forearm form lying down, universes like seeds are coming out of the pores of his skin or out of his nostrils, and expanding as universes, and then coming into, and then going, and then another, and he expands into countless forms that enter these countless universes, and from that Gobadak said Vishnu, a lotus flower, each one of them lotus flowers sprouted, and Brahma is born. There's no need to look to science fiction for excitement and wild things. But who can say that it's not true, authoritatively, that this can't be true? Who has the authority, the position, the all-knowingness to know this can't be true? Who can say that there's no universe that's past this universe? So a different system is used. So Lord Brahma lives only for the duration of one breath, and according to our time scale, 4,320,000,000 years constitute only 12 hours for Brahma, and Brahma lives 100 of his years. Yet the whole life of Brahma is contained within one breath of Mahavishnu. Thus it is not possible for us to imagine the breathing power of Mahavishnu, who is but a partial manifestation of Lord Nityananda. So by understanding the incredible scope of the universe and its insignificance in comparison to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma's insignificance in comparison to Gobadakshaya Vishnu, and Gobadakshaya Vishnu is an expansion of Karanadakshaya Vishnu, is an expansion of Sankarsan, who is an expansion of Balaram, who is the same as Nityananda, then we can get some appreciation. When we hear that what Nityananda is doing, we get some appreciation how wonderful are the things that he's doing. This, so this is not possible for us to imagine the breathing power of Mahavishnu, who is but a partial manifestation of Lord Nityananda. This, the author of Chaitanya Charitamrita explains in the 9th verse. In the 10th and 11th verses, Krishnadas Kaviraj describes Garbhadaksha Vishnu and Giridaksha Vishnu, successive plenary expansions of Mahavishnu. Brahma appears upon a lotus growing from the navel of Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and within the stem of that lotus are so many planetary systems. Then Brahma creates the whole of human society, animal society, everything. Giridaksha Vishnu lies on the milk ocean within the universe, of which he is the controller and maintainer. Thus Brahma is the creator, Vishnu is the maintainer, and when the time comes for annihilation, blank will finish everything. Fill in the blank. Lord Shiva. Ha. So in the first 11 verses of Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami thus discusses Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu as Sri Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Nityananda as Balaram, the first expansion of Krishna. Then in the if you think for a second of, you take the Krishna's power is so unlimited. It's so unlimited, unlimitedly unlimited. Universes, many universes, planets, Brahmas, Vishnus, expansions, unlimitedly beautiful, unlimitedly powerful. And just imagine or get a glimpse, if Krishna has unlimited power, and this is just a small manifestation of his power, just imagine his unlimited beauty, what that means. If he has strength, and we can't even begin to conceive of his unlimited, the unlimited scope of his strength, just imagine what his unlimited beauty is like. If we imagine someone who is beautiful, what can we say? How many times do we have to multiply that by? We can't even conceive of it before we get a glimpse of Krishna's beautiful beauty. And therefore, he is all attractive. He's all attractive. All attractive. His beauty is unlimited. That means one cannot keep one's mind and eyes from staring at Krishna. And the gopis of Vrindavan, when their eyes would blink, or say, what do they call it? Twinkling of, huh? The twinkling of your eyes. Just some people they call it instead of blinking, but twinking. Yes.
The twinkling of an eye is a very short interval.
Yes. So if you just imagine, everyone blink for an hour, make an experiment, and open your eyes quickly, blinking, and we blink all the time and we don't even notice it. But the gopis would criticize Brahma, the creator of eyes that blink, because for that fraction, nanosecond, they are deprived of seeing Krishna and his beauty. So just imagine how beautiful Krishna must be. That just not being able to see him for that fraction is intolerable. Or when Krishna, when he was with his cowherd boyfriends, he would walk, because they were walking through the forest, he would walk behind a tree for a moment. As he was walking, he'd walk one way and there'd be a tree blocking one boy's eyes. Intolerable. For a moment. How beautiful. How lovely. This is the full manifestation of the potency of beauty, of the potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Then, so Lord Krishna is the Supreme, Mahaprabhu is Krishna himself, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and Lord Nityananda is Balaram, the first expansion of Krishna. Then in the 12th and 13th verses, he describes Advaita Charja, who was another principal associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and an incarnation of Mahavishnu. Thus, Advaita Charya is also the Lord, or more precisely, an expansion of the Lord. Now let's just read the two verses that describe Advaita Charya, which are 12 and 13. Mahavishnu Jagatkarta Mayaya Yatsrijat Tada Tasya Avatara Evayam Advaita Charya Ishvara. Lord Advaita Charya is the incarnation of Mahavishnu, whose main function is to create the cosmic world through the actions of Maya. Advaitam Harina Dvaitad Acharyam Bhakti Samsanat Bhaktavataram Ishamtam Advaita Charyam Atsraye. Because he is not different from Hari, so there's two. The one verse describes he's an incarnation of Mahavishnu, and the second verse, because he's not different from Hari, the Supreme Lord, he is called Advaita, because Advaita means non different, and because he propagates the cult of devotion, he is called Acharya. He is the Lord and the incarnation of the Lord's devotee. Therefore, Krishna, as Kaviraj says, Advaita Charya Masre, I take shelter of him. Now, next Tuesday is Advaita Charya's appearance day. And Advaita Charya is very merciful. Seeing the miserable condition of the world in Kali Yuga, he himself prayed for the Lord to incarnate. And the pastimes between Advaita Charya and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were very funny. And also the pastimes between Advaita Charya and Nityananda Prabhu were quite humorous. They're always fighting. So this is what Prabhupada is going to explain. So we've heard those two verses, and just see how clearly Prabhupada explains the same thing. In the 12th and 13th verses, he describes Advaita Charya, who is another principal associate of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and an incarnation of Mahavishnu. Thus, Advaita Charya is also the Lord, or more precisely, an expansion of the Lord. The Lord Advaita means non-dual, and his name is such because he is none different from the Lord. He is also called Acharya, teacher, because he disseminated Krishna consciousness. In this way, he is just like Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Although Lord Chaitanya is Sri Krishna himself, he had appeared as a devotee to teach people in general how to love Krishna. Similarly, although Advaita Charya is the Lord, he appeared just to distribute the knowledge of Krishna consciousness. Thus, he is also the Lord incarnated as a devotee. And then the 14th verse. Panchatat Satmakam Krishnam Bhakta Rupa Sarupakam Bhaktyavataram Bhaktyakam Namami Bhakta Shaktikam. This is to the Panchatattva. I offer my obeisances unto the Supreme Lord Krishna, who is none different from his features as a devotee, devotional incarnation, devotional manifestation, pure devotee, and devotional energy. So these are the aspects of the Absolute Truth, and they will be explained later in the chapter entitled Lord Chaitanya and Five Features. So this is the five features of the Absolute. So we'll read that paragraph and then we shall stop for this moment. In the past times, let's try to listen and see what Prabhupada, what instructions we can get for our own spiritual life. In the past times of Lord Chaitanya, Krishna is manifested in five different features, known as Panchatattva, to whom Srila Krishnadas Kaviraj offers his obeisances in the 14th verse of the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So I'm going, after I finish this paragraph, I'll ask you if there's anything that you heard in here that first, either that you remember, or that struck you, or is for you, or that you think you can apply. Krishna and his associates appear as devotees of the Supreme Lord in the form of Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Sri Nityananda Prabhu, Sri Advaita Charya, Sri Gadardha Prabhu, and Sri Vas Prabhu. In all cases, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is the source of energy for all his devotees. Since this is the case, if we take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu for the successful execution of Krishna consciousness, we are sure to make progress. In a devotional song, Narottama Das Thakur sings, "My dear Lord Chaitanya, please have mercy upon me. There is no one who is as merciful as you. My plea is most urgent because your mission is to deliver all fallen souls, and no one is more fallen than I. Therefore, I beg priority." Anyone catch anything that was suitable for remembrance of being applied inspiration?
Prabhupada relates Krishna appearing in five features related to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, giving energy.
Yeah, that's the pivotal phrase in there, isn't it?
Yeah. Giving energy to his devotees, therefore, whatever a devotee requires is in need of, or is whatever shelter he is requiring, can be attained.
Thank you. Saranagaji.
Narottama Das Thakur's prayer strikes my heart, because no matter how fallen one is, one can take shelter of what you're saying. Please don't turn up because he's so merciful.
And in fact, being the more fallen one is, up at the front of the line, one has priority. Therefore, I beg priority. Thank you. Anyone else?
I would have liked me at the end of my human life. Thank you.
The whole line is fun. We are beggars.
At the end of the line is India.
You'll never get
that
it. Good point. Good point. You'd be the only person in India. You'll never get on the bus.
You'll never get on the bus.
Yes, it looks magnificent. It's talking about India, isn't it?
It's true, though.
Comparing that sort of thing.
But you invoke Indian thought because you're Indian, so then we think of India.
That's good.
And then we think of the line of India.
And not minding being at the end.
When you think of India, it is so pregnant with all sorts of things, you know. And
mostly people.
Well,
there's so many people.
That's the question.
That's why it's so hard to get on a bus.
Anywhere, even in a plane. Even in a plane.
Especially in Bombay.
No, it's not
everywhere.
Because you're trying to get on, everyone's trying to get off.
Yeah, it's very good. That shows the importance of that country. The Lord is sending all sorts of souls to that country for, you know, advancing in spiritual knowledge.
And if not, for getting on trains and off trains.
That's the land of the blessed.
Now this is the other side. This is the opposite side of India that we didn't hear about so far yet today. So we should hear about that. The land of the blessed.
Even Shukadeva Maharaj in his Bhagavatam has said that the India is the real land where all these great souls take birth to advance further and further in their spiritual strength.
And even the demigods say, "I'd like to take birth there." And of all the places in India, the best place to take birth is Bengal. Yes? And of all the languages that are closest to Sanskrit,
Punjabi.
Punjabi.
Sanskrit language flourished in this area of North India.
Yes.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah. We've had a quick laugh, so now we can have a quick question.
If you desire to go past hearing to receiving.
Hearing, past hearing to receiving?
I mean, to receiving the knowledge.
If you want to go to the next stage of receiving knowledge after hearing it?
To me, it seems like there's a distinction between hearing
and
receiving.
No, because hearing is a sense that you're receiving it whether you're willing or not.
There's a context which just comes up.
This question?
The way the father keeps raising that.
Yes.
Is that we were reading something from the Gita, perhaps it talked, Bhagavatam talked about the Mahatma. Receives transcendental messages from the realized soul.
The Mahatma receives it?
The Mahatma
is one who
receives transcendental messages. But in the context as we were reading it, it sounded quite mysterious that they received them and that they went deeply into their heart.
Oh, so
on the difference between like something going in your
heart. Oh, yeah. So why don't we talk about it in terms of receptivity? Receiver. You have to be, as Bunky said before, you have to be tuned into the same frequency. In other words, if the message is pure, the receiver has to be pure. It has to be, the love pulls it. But the power of So that's for the perfect transmission, one has to be pure, and not only pure, because pure means the absence of impurity, but one has to have the positive of love for Krishna. Then one can actually realize everything just by the hearing process. But aside from that, being fully receptive, Prithvimaj was fully receptive. Aside from that, just by the process of hearing, it also makes one receptive. It awards receptivity. Because, there's that one verse, Shrimatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtanam Ridhyantasto Yabhadrani Vidunoti Sarasatam. Krishna, who is within everyone's heart, when someone is eager to hear, Krishna acts as a special well-wishing friend of that soul due to his eagerness to hear, and he cleans away all the obstacles, the inauspiciousness from within. So that comes from eagerness. So one could also say that eagerness is a quality that's if we don't have love and we don't have purity, but if we have eagerness, everything will manifest from that. And then if we don't have eagerness, huh?
Or if not eagerness, willingness.
Yeah, willingness, and you can keep on going and then just being there. At least if you're there.
Hearing precise.
Yeah.
Which can be on different levels. To be there means enough to control.
Yeah. And also, yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam Shravan, just by hearing. Yeah, it has as Prabhupada would emphasize this, it has a potency just by hearing, just by taking your valuable time, and instead of going to the cinema, just coming and hearing it's a sacrifice of the hearing process. It's an offering to Krishna. It's a telling Krishna that yes, I'm willing to do this. And Krishna says thank you, and he purifies. You are sacrificing something to me, yayitam mam papadyante, I reciprocate. Is that answer? So the more So the spectrum of receptivity can go from on the highest end, full love, where one is really pulling it out of the speakers. Like you hear that in the Bhagavatam, you hear how the resonance of Vrindavan, they just simply talked about Krishna continuously and heard about Krishna. They had no other interest. It was so alive. And there's one comment by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur and saying that, we're just saying that Krishna appeared to them as they're talking about him. He's there. He's actually there. So that's at the furthest end of the spectrum, or the deepest end of the spectrum. And then the closest may be, I'm here. I'm going to plant my body here and try. My ears are here, and I can't stop hearing, even though, you know, I can close my eyes, but I can't close my ears. So I'm planting my body in such a way that I can hear. So the vibration, transcendental vibration. So that's at the other end of the spectrum. So we do the best we can, whatever, according to who we are and what our capacity is. We take our step towards Krishna, and then Krishna reciprocates. We can't take someone else's step, and we shouldn't be resentful of that, but we should do what we can do, not what we can't do. We should do what we can do.
That progression in the Bhagavatam describes Shushushol Shabdasha Vasudevata Jesus, and the hearing of sight comes the taste.
And from the service comes the taste.
Mm.
That's what that is.
Oh, yes.
From serving, Shyat Mahat Sevaya Vipro, Punatirtana Sevana. From the service to the Mahat comes the faith, but it becomes the hearing, taste for hearing.
Yeah.
Hearing is the root.
And from the hearing comes
the next. Comes everything. Everything is stemmed from the hearing.
Yeah.
So the emphasis is on sound vibration. Not so much on seeing. I once looked at a book. I remember where I saw it, but I can't remember which book it was. It said something that Prabhupada's always said. It was a Western book, and said that previously the emphasis always was on hearing. But then starting with the printing press and things like that, but everything shifted at some point to seeing, and seeing became one's the major sense in touch with reality. And then I read something else. This one will leave you with. And he said, "What invention?" This was a question. What invention changed civilization and shifted it more than other invention? It made it completely self-absorbed and selfish, etc., etc.
Self-centered.
What's your guess? What's your guess?
I know the answer.
Okay. Okay. Linda, what's your guess? And you said yours? Telephone. Yes? Is that what you said? Yeah. Radharman's going to think deeply about this one. Anyway, this was one person's. You want some time to think deeply about it? You better figure it out. Anyway, the answer was the mirror.
Good one.
Oh, well, isn't that wonderful? Oh, and only if I go. And then then the false ego was born. Of course.
The false ego was already born.
It was already born. Okay, thank you. Hare Krishna. I thought that was so funny when I read that.
When I was young,
yes,
we didn't have any bears because we had them to protect us from false vanity.
Wow.
What was that? We didn't have any when I was a child. We didn't have any bears, but we were no bears. We were allowed to use them.